Hi, I'm Kaylee, a college student and pretend journalist who was conceived with donor sperm in 1999. This is Message in a Bottle. Hi, we're going to try something new today. Instead of me giving a formal summary of the interview before you hear the interview, I'm just going to play the interview. It's just a groundbreaking idea. I know it's only taken me 17 episodes to come to this conclusion. But super fast, I will remind you to follow the podcast on whatever you're listening to this on and follow the Instagram. Thank you. Enough of that. But this is my conversation with Cora.
So hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So it's Cora, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And is it Kaylee or mm-hmm. Kaylee? Okay.
Great. Yeah, I get all kinds of guesses.
I'm sure.
Good. All right. Well, hi.
Hi.
So, yeah, I mean, I was looking through some of your posts in the Facebook group mm-hmm. and I get some of it, but I like don't know if I quite understand the whole story. With these, I usually will just ask somebody to like introduce themselves, give a brief background on their story and situation, and then we'll just I'll ask a question.
All right, sounds good. Dive in. So I guess let's see, my story and situation. So I guess it all started when I had my first son, and that he was conceived naturally at when I was 38. So I was already kind of late getting into the game. But he actually was super quick, easy. We weren't even actually trying or anything. He just, so it was like we had him and there were no issues. And we just said, okay, in 2 years, we'll try for another. You know, it was one of those kind of like, didn't even really think about the fact that I was older because it was so easy with getting pregnant with him.
Right.
So then 2 years later came and we just kind of always assumed there'd be another, and 2 years later came, we're like, okay, here we go into number two. And that just kind of didn't happen. We worked at it naturally for a while. We, tried all the different routes. And it just, when I say all the different routes, we tried, regular, we tried turkey baster, we tried UTI, IUI, all the initials.
No, there's so many acronyms in this whole thing. It's like someone needs to make a dictionary immediately.
Yes. So IUI, IVF. And when none of that happened, we were kind of at a place where we were just going to stop trying, but it just didn't feel right to us, any of us. My son, this was probably 4 years into trying still. We were at this mm-hmm. point where, we just felt like there was another soul that belonged in our family. My husband and I still really wanted another. My son was just like, where's my sister? He's mm-hmm. convinced that he was, and we would always ask him like, what do you think it's going to be? And he would say, I don't care, but it's going to be a girl.
That's interesting. Cause I feel like young kids usually say what that, they're,
absolutely. Like and it was funny because he would say over and over, I don't really care, but it's going to be a girl.
That's funny.
So when all the avenues that we had to go naturally didn't work, we kind of considered adoption and we considered fostering and those kinds of things. But knew a lot of people in those worlds and knew that was kind of, had its own set of issues. And we just really wanted to do what was going to be best for bringing another soul into the world. And so I kind of, at that point, it was interesting because it hadn't even really crossed my mind to do a donor egg or donor eggs or anything like that. And then someone mentioned it to me and all of a sudden I was like, well, of course, like, why wouldn't we have thought about this? So we kind of went into it. I have a fairy godmother. It's my godmother. We call her my fairy godmother because she kind of said, I see that this family like is aching for another person to be. Like, it was just kind of like the whole world knew, my world knew to, that just there was somebody else who was supposed to be in this family. And she was like, I will help and do, you know, whatever we need to do to help you make that happen. And so I was fortunate enough because the whole rest of the process is so costly. And then going into all the, you know, the whole process of, as we know, of using donors is also very expensive for all the meds and the procedures and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I selected a bank. Actually, I selected a clinic. The clinic that I had used for IVF, I really didn't like very much at all.
Wait, I have a question.
Yes, please.
So they determined that it was the eggs and not the sperm.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So okay. My husband is actually 6 years younger than me.
Okay.
And he was like a super spermer. Like he had like all the vitality and all the motility and all the things. And mm-hmm. It was, you know, and so it was definitely my eggs. They were just too old. I had lots of them and all of my other numbers made it seem like I should be able to, you know, to get pregnant naturally, but we got lots of eggs and none of them came back viable. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, okay, this is just not happening. And I have never been a person myself that's been too much on it's gotta be mine. So that was kind of an easy loss for me. Mm-hmm. In that I grew up with half siblings and step siblings and this and that. And it just like, I just knew there was supposed to be someone else in our family. I didn't, you know, there was at one point, even before we had started trying to have another one, that a friend of mine was pregnant and didn't feel like she was going to be able to, you know, keep her baby. And I was like, well, we'll take her, you know, whatever. And that ended up, the pregnancy ended up failing. So it didn't happen, but it was like, we just knew there was supposed to be someone else. It didn't really. So it was, I know for some people, and maybe it's because I already had one, you know, that was genetically mine, but for me, it was not a huge loss to lose that aspect. So it was like, oh, duh, why not do this? And so it was kind of an easy switch into using a donor. What's interesting is, of course, I was not part of the big group. I was not part of, you know, Facebook groups then. So I didn't have a lot of the knowledge around some of the issues that it can bring for the donor conceived person. I did have a friend who was actually just finding out at about the same time that we were going into this process. She was late discovery.
Oh, wow.
That she was donor conceived. So that really kind of started shedding some light for me. And, you know, as we were choosing our donor, it was really important to me that it was going to be a situation that was going to be open, that it was going to be someone who, you know, it was very important to me that the donor looked like me, but not because I cared so much, but because I didn't want the child to feel othered. I wanted them to feel very at home in our family. I wanted mm-hmm. it to be someone who had a lot of the same values as we did, so that it would just kind of be an easier fit.
Right.
So we were lucky enough to find a donor who I felt really kind of fit into our family. You know, as reading through all of her information and seeing her pictures and everything, she felt like someone who could be a family member. And I mistakenly, at the time that we were choosing our donor, also thought that she would be open as soon as my daughter was ready to read, or as soon as, I shouldn't say daughter, because at the time we didn't know what she was going to be, but as soon as the child was ready to reach out. And I was still at the time, you know, of the mindset of, oh, it should all be child led. And, you know, that kind of, you know, so I was like, well, whenever she's ready to reach out, be that 2 or 15 or whatever, she can reach out to the donor and everything will be fine. So this is perfect. But there was definitely language in there about the donor being, you know, open and available for contact. And I thought somehow that was the case. So we went forward with that donor. We were very lucky in that she was quite prolific. We got lots of embryos and we just kind of told the doctor, pick one. We didn't actually do, I mean, they tested them and stuff, but we didn't do any of the testing for gender or anything like that. They just, I guess they didn't do testing. They did the grading.
Right.
So we just said, pick one and put it in. And, you know, and the very first go was successful and brought us our Riley. When she was quite young, I joined the big group because I was starting to get even more and more information from my friend. And she had mentioned the group and I was like, you know, I need to get all the information while she's really little so I can be as informed as possible. Mm-hmm. And the group was great and really opened my eyes in so many ways. I was definitely one of, you know, the mom that was, I am the mom and she is the donor or the writer, you know, that whole person going into the group, and very quickly realized that that was problematic. I even went back and like my announcement, you know, my Facebook announcement about Riley even said that, you know, language that we're going to use, I am the mom and she is the, you know, I went back and changed it and said, I need to edit this post because that is clearly not, you know.
But that's good that it's some people I find will read that with their opinion and then be able to change their mind if they feel like it makes more sense. And then some people, I feel like they read the other side of it and they get defensive even more and then start, you know, and then that's why I think a lot of the fights in the Facebook group happen. And it's like,
I agree. And it's so funny because, you know, I immediately went back to a different group that was much more our, you know, mom centered, RP, you know, centered. And I went in there and said something. And I was like, no, how dare you? You know, she is not the mom. And I was like, whoa, okay, well, back out of that group.
I should infiltrate one of those groups.
It's all about my kid. yeah, I mean, I think even in raising, you know, both of my kids, I am extremely child centered. You know, I just believe that I'm here to help support and guide and nurture, and they will become who they are. And my job is just to support that, right? So whatever I can do to really make it easier for them and to make it better for them, that's what I'm here for. So even if I had to deal with a little discomfort for a minute of realizing that, you know, no, I'm not going to be the only mom, you know, like that's just, that was okay. So we changed, went back, we, you know, thought, went over that language. We talked to the rest of my family and said, hey, just so you know, this is, you know, a little paradigm switch. This is how we're looking at this now. And everybody said, okay, we're on board. And then I reached out to the clinic to say, so how does it all work when she's ready to reach out to her? Because we were ready to coach her. As soon as she was able to talk, she was going to be able to ask the clinic
on
to
the
talk
phone,
to her egg mama, right? Yep. So I want to talk to my egg mama. That's what we were all ready for. And they went, oh no, it's anonymous. And I was like, what? And I had my little freak out moment. And mm-hmm. You may have seen that post. I came back to the group all upset and like,
right,
oh my God, what have I done? And, very quickly, instead of freaking out, got into my mama bear mode and contacted the clinic and said, what can I do? I need to, you know, I'm going to send I would like to send an email to the donor, asking if she would be willing to change the contract to open. And they're like, well, no one's ever done this. You know, this is the first time anyone's asked. And I was like,
so not true, I bet.
Oh, I'm probably not true, but even if it's so, like, that's not the kind of thing that's going to stop me. Like, okay, right. So let's, you know, test these uncharted waters. Let's do this. So I wrote the email and they forwarded to her within a day, 24 hours. She had responded back that yes, she would be interested in being open. So that was like, you know, a huge relief. And seeing more and more how often that's not the case for some people, that they reach out and get these horrible answers or don't get mm-hmm. any answers, I feel so relieved. And I feel, again, that like we did a really good job picking the person that we did, because I know somewhere in there was verbiage about her being open, you know? So it's like, okay, I didn't make that up.
The contract, it's like, when you say the verbiage, meaning like something that she had written.
Right, exactly. So there was a big essay. Right.
There was a big essay in there from her.
And I think somewhere in there it said, because I had, like I said, I had it in my head.
Right.
It was going to be an open situation. And I wouldn't have just made that up from nowhere. And I believe that it had to have been in her essay that I got that.
But the whole thing does like anonymous, technically. Like that's why you didn't. Oh, okay. Right.
So what I didn't realize, because I was just signing my life away at the time, was that it was actually a completely anonymous contract, which now I know is so yucky. So excited that she was able to, you know, and willing, I should say, to change her contract. We, the clinic had us, had me kind of contract the attorney to, well, actually first, I'm trying to remember now which way it went, but there was an attorney situation where we had to change the contract. And then there was a psych situation where we had to do two individual psych sessions and then a joint psych session just to kind of, and it wasn't really like to determine whether or not we could do it. It was just to kind of help bridge. So the woman that we talked to got a really good feel for us, me and my husband, and got a really good feel for Maida, our donor, and just kind of made sure that she would be able to kind of help us have a really great first conversation mm-hmm. and make sure we were kind of on the same page so that there wouldn't be any huge surprises for anyone. And thankfully that went really, really well. We met, and after that first Zoom, because it was right in the middle of COVID, after that first Zoom call, we were both very much like, okay, yeah, let's do this. Unfortunately, all the red tape with the attorneys and whatever took forever, but in the meantime, we found each other through Facebook. So even though officially our contract took forever to change, we had started contacting each other yeah. through there sooner. And now we see her at about once a month.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Which is great. She lives we're in the city and she's like in a north suburb. Her best friend lives around the corner. So small world. And so far we've met her, we've met Riley's sister. So her youngest is a girl. She's got two older boys and then a younger girl. And they're 14, 16, and 16. So she had already had children.
Right, right.
When she got in. So my daughter Riley has met her sister, her genetic mom, and she just met her genetic grandma as well.
Oh, wow.
So that was fun. She hasn't met the boys yet. And what's really interesting is that Maida's husband is not interested right now. He's like, I have no desire to meet this child. Like, he's kind of removing uh-huh. himself, which, and we knew that. I mean, she came on saying right away, he doesn't want to be a part of this right now. It's not stopping me from doing what I want to do, you know? And like, I would never let that. He's like, but I think women and men are very different in terms of how they see all this. Like, she's probably been thinking about it all this time. And he probably just kind of put it out of his mind. And now it's probably like, oh my gosh. And there, you know, there's more of these out there somewhere that are come knocking on the door, and what are they going to want from us? And so right. I think he's very, but we're all kind of hoping that he'll come around as yes, everybody probably. Meets her and, you know, she kind of becomes part of their family, that he'll jump in.
But he knew about her donating.
Oh yeah. Right. I mean, they were together when she was donating.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah. No, he definitely knew about her. And we were the, I think, fifth or sixth family that she donated to.
Oh, wow. So she has a lot of eggs.
Well, we don't know because the clinic isn't so great about saying how many. I know there were some live births, but we don't know how many. They are not big on, like, only the one family does get any embryos. They don't give, you know, they don't like donate them out or adopt them out after that. So at least it's just those few families. We know that for sure, but we don't know how many siblings there are out there. So we're gonna, actually, I just got a kit in the mail. We're gonna swab mm-hmm. Riley and get her DNA out there so that we can see if any of the siblings have also, because she would be the youngest of them.
So did the bank tell Maida, like, a kid was born, or like, this family picked you? Like,
She knew when families picked her, and I think she knew that we had a live birth because we asked
to change the clinic
to tell her. Right. I haven't asked a whole lot of questions about what else she knows about the others. It's weird because I kind of don't want to push it. I know that she doesn't, I know we are the only ones that she knows and that have reached out and who have tried to make contact, because she said she would be open, of course, to the others. And I know that none of the others have tried. Yeah.
So maybe eventually they'll be in
there. Yeah. And maybe some are trying to find siblings, but because it's anonymous, don't realize that they could reach, you know, I mean,
right.
We get fed so much crap about what you can and can't do. You know, from the industry. And so, you know, a lot of people who are in these anonymous situations feel like they have to honor that. And
right. I would love to read one of those contracts, because I never have. Like, my parents used an anonymous donor because I'm pretty sure that was the only option, because it was like the late 90s. And I think that was the only, but they definitely signed stuff. So I just wonder, that's interesting, like how they worded and like how. It's like the parent cannot go searching for the donor or cannot, right?
Right. We won't go looking for them. We won't search for, right. So
like, what, and then if they did, like, and what would happen? Like, if, I guess the only, like, the only bad thing that would happen is that if the donor was really mad that they were found and then, like, told the bank about that.
I guess there's this whole issue too, where if the bank still has gametes, they can withhold them if they find out that you've been looking.
Oh, right, right. From you again.
Right. So there's that whole thing, but we weren't worried about that. I mean, I wasn't worried about anything except for doing what was right for Riley, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was like, I looked for how to do it in a way that was non-threatening and whatever, and inviting and just, hey, you know, whatever. But it was the kind of thing where if it had been a no, then we were going to try again in a year. And then we were going to try again in another year. And mm-hmm. then we were going to try again, you know, when she was old enough to kind of make a video or do whatever, then we, you know, she would have appealed and maybe gotten through that way. Because, you know, it was just at that point, and until she, unless, of course, she had said, I don't want to, and I would, you know, but I knew, having talked and heard so many of your voices, that it was just the right thing to make it happen as young as possible. So that's what we did. And I'm glad that I ignored them saying nope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we've been so fortunate because she and her family are, I mean, they're just lovely people. And Riley loves them and they love Riley. And it's just, they've been at, you know, birthdays, and
that's like the ideal situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's so great. Yeah.
That's so interesting. So Riley has sort of three sets of grandparents and she have like different names, or what are the terms that she uses?
So right now, so.
Also, how old is she?
She's only 2.5.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So Maya is Maya. Maida is the donor. She calls her Maya. But we also, like, when we're reading What Makes a Baby, we call her egg mama, you know, uh-huh. So I'm using mom or mama with her so that she starts making that connection, you know, and I'm not going to just spring it on her all of a sudden. Like, I want it to be very clear, you know.
Right. Like, remember that lady we see all the time? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You know, yeah. Right. Exactly. You know, how did you know Maya is, you know, I want her to grow up knowing right. that she is another mama type person. And Maida is very on board with that. Like, she knows that that's the terminology we're using. But she calls her Maya. Like, that's what she says right now is Maya. Mm-hmm. But if we're reading the book and I say, and it says, you know, you need an egg, and I'll say, you know, who gave mama an egg? And she'll say, Maya gave mama, you know, and who gave you sperm? Dada. And whose uterus did we use? Mama, you know, so mm-hmm. she knows that things came from different people, and she's starting to get, and then, you know, so that's, and then her, Maya's daughter, so her sister, she calls my Mia. So her name is Malia, and she calls her instead of Malia, she calls her my Mia, which is the cutest thing ever. So that's her Mia. And then her genetic grandmother, she calls Rosa. They've only met once, and her name is Rosa. So she calls her Rosa for now. I mean, but who knows, you know, what any of these are. And I'm fine with her using whatever terms she wants to call anybody in her life. So
yeah,
you know, it's just, yeah, it's easy for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
I know, I'm trying to think. It's like, usually you have to probe people to sort of get to, like, well, what do you really think about, you know, that, but that's a really, this is a great sort of example situation or story, because so many, yeah. So many people, I feel like, have this fear of having this third party or this extra person, and, you know, feeling like they would be threatened in some way. Or,
and I won't lie, I mean, at the beginning, again, you know, before that was me, you mm-hmm. know, there was that fear there, and, like, you know,
which it makes sense. Like,
and it does, you know, but you eventually, like, if you can just sit with it and breathe and take it in, you know, it's that whole thing of, my favorite thing is, like, love is not pie, and we tell our kids this.
Wait,
all
what did
the
you
time.
Say love is what
love is not pie, like, we don't have slices that we can give out and then it's all gone, right? Like,
that's really interesting.
We teach our kids this all the time, like, you know, people have, you know, two kids, or people have one kid, or people have seven kids, and they'll tell them, oh, there's enough love from mom to give to all of you, So why wouldn't there be enough love from our kids to share that? And why isn't it okay to have as many people in the world want to share their love with your kid as possible? You know, so, right. So once we got past the fact, past the idea that she wasn't like psychotic or something, or, that she was a safe person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, if we don't want to make sure she was a safe person to have in Riley's life. And as soon as we got past that, like, bring it, you know, like that was just, you know, once I could kind of open my mind to that, it was like, well, duh, you know, but yeah. What can it hurt? So,
yeah, that's a really good way of thinking about it. Love is not pie.
Yeah. And I still have moments, you know, especially, it's funny because I'll be reading through the group and someone will say, you know, give a story about how they wish they had, you know, grown up with their biological, you know, parent. And it's like, oh, you know, I have to take that breath and, you know, hope that she never really feel. I mean, she might say that to me sometime, you know, I want to go live with Maya, you suck, you know, and I'll deal with that because guess what? My son, who's mine, has told, you know, who's biologically mine, genetically mine, has before told me, you know, I hate you, you know, and it just can't say the name of things, you know, and like you take a deep breath and you realize that they're just coming from a place and we'll work through it, you know, but still seeing that is the actual heartfelt feeling for some donor conceived people is that they wish that they hadn't grown up with the family that they had. Like, that's, you know, it breaks my heart and it makes me really, you know, just dig deep. And I have to do everything I can to let her have her feelings about all of this, like, throughout. And, you know, if she ever is having a hard time, to be okay with that and be accepting. And, you know, if she wants therapy, or even if she doesn't, but I feel like it maybe needs to happen, like, we'll do that and we'll take that on. You know, I mean, it's just like any other, you know, thing. Like, that's my role is to realize that there could be some difficulties along the way and be there to help her through, you know, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. And a lot of the time, I think, I haven't seen that comment like a lot about the, I wish I had been raised by my biological parent or parents or whatever.
Right.
I wonder if that would have, like, if the person would have felt the same way about their family, whether that was their biological family or not, like, maybe it was just a dynamic of that relationship and it's not so much about, yeah.
Right. And oftentimes, and it does also come accompanied with, you know, they grew up somewhere where they didn't fit in, or they were lied to, or, you know, they just always felt very different and separate, and, or it was abuse, you know, so like, it's not usually coming from a place where I had a, you know, terrific life and I knew all along and I fit right in, but I still wish, you know, that I don't see that. So.
Right. But I'm saying when people have the opposite of that, where they didn't know and they, all of those things, it's like, did they really, it's like, it's probably a problem with the relationship with the social family in the first place, not like the idea that the biological family is so much better or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is interesting. So you, that was funny that you said something about you felt like she could be a family member.
Oh yeah. I mean, we love her, you know, I mean, she's just, it's, I can't wait. I kind of want her husband to jump on board because I can't wait until like they're coming over for, you know, holidays and we're going over there for like, I feel like that's in the future somewhere. And it just will just be like, you know, extended family all the way around, not just through Riley, but just because we all love and appreciate each other.
Right.
You know, it just feels so comfortable. And it's funny too, because if you look at pictures, we look like we could all be related, not just to Riley, but, you know, so it's just comfortable. And she's lovely and she's smart and she's, you know, we have great conversations and it just, you know, it just feels good. So it's been nice not having to go, okay, you know, and she's known and she's great, but I kind of don't like her. And I kind of wish we didn't have to spend this time with her. It's like, oh, when's the next time we get to do something with them, you know, and the kids are great. And it's really fantastic, you know. And it was funny because I tell Riley all the time that she's beautiful and I love her so much, you know, and I'll look at her. And the other day Oh, and a lot of times when I tell her, like, oh, Riley, you're so beautiful, she'll say, thank you, mama. You know, and the other day I looked at her and I said, Riley, you look just like your Mia, you know, and she looked at me and she said, thank you, mama. And I think she could tell by the expression on my face that I was telling her how beautiful she was. You know what I mean? Like, I could see her sister in her, and I could see her genetic mom in her, and it was beautiful, you know. And it just, you know, and I never want her to feel like when I say, like, oh, I see them in you, that it's like, uh-oh, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. It's lovely to me. It's great. I love that I see them in her because they're really wonderful too. And so I love that. And at the same time, you know, her teacher the other day said she was making some, you know, Riley is extremely expressive. And I was on a video conference with her teacher, and she's like, oh my gosh, Riley looks just like you. And now I see, you know, like all these expressions that I make, Riley makes, and, you know, she's gives the, you know, these expressions. And so it's great to know that, you know, I'm happy, you know, that she has moments where she has parts of me in her too, you know. So
yeah,
it's,
definitely.
It's fun, but, you know,
I do that for sure with my non-biological mom. We don't look alike really at all, but I also don't look like my biological mom very much, but people will always tell us in public, like, oh, you're, you know, you look so alike, or things like that. But I find myself, I've made fun of her a lot of the time for some of the things she says, like, you know, to waiters, or like, she's just corny sometimes, and I would always make fun of her. And then it's like, I'm older now, and I'm, you know, in these situations, and I'm almost, it's like compulsively like gonna say, you know. So you do get things from your parents that you're around. It's not just about
And it's funny because my biological son, Micah, he,
I love my husband is white. Your names.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My husband is white and I'm biracial. So my mom is white, my dad is black. And my biological son is, I mean, the fairest kid. He's like white, has blonde hair, blue eyes.
Blonde.
So even though biologically he's, you know, mine,
right?
People questioned the whole time. I would, you know, oh, are you the nanny? Oh, is he yours? Oh, is he adopted? You know, it's funny. And with Riley, no one ever.
No
asked.
One says anything. Yeah.
Not a thing. Because she's in between my husband and I, you know, so, but it's just funny that, so she, her, you know, the one that's not genetically mine, we never get a question about, but the one, and that was part of, you know, why I wanted to make sure we use someone who could kind of make that happen for her, because I didn't want her to, on top of everything else, be constantly having to deal with people going, do you want me? So
yeah,
it's nice that hasn't been.
Was he excited? So he was right about the,
he was absolutely right. And we did not, like I said, we did not do any kind of choosing or picking or whatever. And he was absolutely, we didn't know until we, you know, until you know, and he was right. And he, you know, again, and we said, what do you want the baby to be? I don't care. I just want it to be here, but it's going to be a girl. He just stuck to it. And he was absolutely right. And they are so adorable together. So, so wonderful together. They both love the heck out of each other, you know, and it's just, and they scream and yell at each other too sometimes. So they should. But they're great. They love each other. And he, you know, and he comes along and go, you know, when we go out and hang out with, Maya and Malia and, you know, and Rosa, that Micah comes to, you know, so he's, you know, part of it all. And it's just family, you know, so it's nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Oh, that's so,
I know, I'm really hard to pull information out of, right? I don't talk at all.
Yeah, there's definitely a range that I've experienced. Like more moments of like, so, you know, you have to cut them out. I don't know. I think that it's just good to be able to get a range of perspectives. And I mean, initially when I started this, first of all, it was a class project and it was, you know, it had nothing to do with, I didn't even know about the Facebook group. Like I had never met another donor conceived person besides my family in my life. Like it was a school, like a philosophy project about my parents and my sperm donor father and my half siblings. And then I kind of fell into the whole group and I was like, wow, the stuff that the donor conceived people are saying is very interesting. And I was like, I'm only going to talk to those people because that's kind of what I you know, that's like all that I was exposed to because I wasn't in this big group for a while after that. But it is good to, I feel like I've gotten a range of people on that. It is interesting to hear different versions or different sides of similar stories. I don't know.
But that's great that people are listening and getting, you know, I shouldn't say I wish I had done things differently because I don't, because it's turned out so beautifully.
Yeah,
but I mean, I can't be more thankful to the stars of, you know, how well everything has fallen into place so far. So again, I don't wish I had done things differently, but I feel like I'm so fortunate to have gotten so well informed so early on. And I wish that more people had a chance to get educated before they even dove into this whole situation. So that, you know, and I wish the industry would shape up because, you know, that was nice too. And I was talking to the attorney, she said that the clinic is actually, it's under a new management. And, you know, the doctor who kind of ran it forever and ever and ever has retired, and that he was the one who was more kind of opposed to the whole, you know, idea of doing open donors and whatnot. And they're really trying to shift, and they've been really looking at research around, you know, the feelings of and the voices of donor-conceived people and trying to figure out what's best in all of this. And so I know that they're really trying to do some work and make some changes. And that,
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
Really,
I haven't checked in real recently to find out kind of where they are, and I think I'm going to try and find out like what's going on now, just to kind of push a little bit and see, because I feel like it should at least be an option. I mean, I feel like anonymity should go away, but
yeah,
I feel like any bank right now that doesn't have the option of having open is doing a completely complete disservice.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating that the anonymous aspect is still happening in America.
Yeah.
A, because in other countries it's like outlawed for, and then in another way, it's almost like it's in some ways pointless to even have an anonymous contract because basically anybody can be tracked down if
you're
hard enough. So
absolutely. And it's kind of like a slap in the face to donor conceived people when in this country, we've made it so clear that, you know, there shouldn't be closed adoptions. And it's like, well, if you come at it from this way, you absolutely should have access. But, oh, if you know, you're don't like.
Right.
How does that make sense? I hate that, you know, people say, oh, but it's different. It's because they're wanted. But that's still the parent's story. Like the child is still in the same place and still, you know, and then the person is still in the same place and still deserves to have all the information. And, you know, it's frustrating. And I can only imagine how frustrating it is for donor-conceived people. You know, it's frustrating for me, but.
I feel frustrated on other people's behalf, I suppose, because I was in a sort of similar situation with as you guys, because I figured out when I was 15 and it wasn't through my parents necessarily, but they were never opposed or they never, you know, prevented me from doing that. And I, you know, did some Googling and figured it out and wrote a letter. And then he responded right away and was very receptive and has like been, you know, around ever since then.
Cool.
So it's not that like I've been directly affected by the problems with the anonymous aspect.
Right.
It is interesting about what you were saying about how you could get this sense of the fact that she was probably willing to be open just by like the vibe of the information. Cause I think my parents felt the same way. Where they would say, like, if I would say, I want to go looking for him when I turn 18, like I want to get the information. Like little did I know that that's not how it worked. And I wouldn't just get the information. I would have to whatever, but you know, and they were like, yeah, I mean, just based on what he sounds like in the tape and on the paper, like he seems like he would
be open to that.
Yeah, he wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But banning anonymity would filter out the people who don't want anything to do with it.
Exactly. And you know, it's so interesting because all these people are so worried. Well, if we ban it, then there, you know, there won't be donors anymore. Well, that hasn't been the case anywhere.
Anywhere else. Yeah.
So let's pick our what ifs and let's choose our battles based on the reality out there, which is that has not been a problem anywhere where they banned it. Like that's, so I don't know. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and it's like, well, it will limit the people that we have to choose from. Okay, great. So now you're only choosing from people who actually want to take part in your child's life.
Right, which
of, like, make sure you have
sounds it. Good to me, but then yeah. Some people hear that and it's like, no. Like, I just want somebody that's like, you know, you leave it in the mailbox and, you know, you don't have anything to do with it. Like, because that's what, yeah. It's all connected. Yeah, yeah. Definitely kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
But I almost can't even blame individual people. It's and the reason that I don't think it will be banned in the whole country anytime soon is just because I don't know, all the these big banks are owned by companies. Yeah. So it's about money. Yeah,
it's absolutely about money. And it's so, you know, and fortunately on the egg side, it's not as, you know, because it's, you know, I think it's like you, it, there's only so far you can go and so many eggs that people, you know, but
right.
It's
and
still,
yeah,
the whole, you know, it's the way they, I mean, they extort tens of thousands of dollars. So, you know, out of people, you know, it's just, it's the whole thing is,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Can I ask, so I actually can't even, I know when I see the Facebook ads, which I get all the time ever since this whole thing of like, become an egg donor, la, la, you know, and I'm like, no, but it's like, you know, you get $10,000. Some people get more than that, $40,000, you know, there's like this one ad that I'm always getting. That's like, are you an Asian Ivy League educated woman? Like get $100,000 for your eggs. And it's like, Jesus, what is,
well, there. So first of all, they're being disingenuous because you never would get that much for one donation.
Right. It's like if you go through it for
if you go through it and do enough of them to max out,
right,
then you could potentially make that much money. So I know, for example, that the clinic that I used, I think it was $7,000 that the donor got. And the way they describe it to us is it's to cover, you know, expenses and you know, I mean, it's being an egg donor is not easy.
No.
So, you know, as opposed to walking in and jizzing in a cup, it's, you know, I mean, there's, you've got to take shots every day for a month.
Yeah, and it definitely clinic, messes don't, with it, your, yeah.
Right. And part of the success rate for the clinic that I went to was that they don't just give the stuff to the donors. They make the donors come to the clinic every single day for their shots.
Oh, wow.
So I gave myself, and they figure that the RPs are, the recipient parents are like motivated enough to make sure that we're doing our own shots. So I did all of mine, but the donors actually have to go in to the clinic every single day for their shots at that time. So, I mean, so it's a pain, you know, and so it didn't feel like that number was unfair to be asking someone to, like, because, you know, I don't know what their work life was like. I don't know what they were giving up to do that every day, you know, and it's not, and then they have to go in and retrieve the eggs, you know, I mean, it's a whole process, right? So that seemed like it wasn't even like, here's a ton of money just for doing this easy thing. Cause it's not, it was like,
right. Yeah. That's not like an unreasonable. Yeah. It costs much more to adopt a child.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But that is opposed to the $35,000 that it costs.
Right. I was going to say, is the $7,000 like you pay that and then that's what she gets? Like, I have a feeling no, because then with the clinic making money. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, no, it's a lot more that you have to pay. It's, you know, and, you know, and so it's, which is also its own set of problematic, because then we're, you know, only certain people can actually,
right.
These, you know, like,
access.
You know, it's very classist and it's very, so it's just all gross.
And I don't know if this does this make sense when you were just saying about you have to pay to receive from somebody who donates? That's not what a donation means. Like, that would be like saying you have to pay $10 to enter the soup kitchen.
Right. Right. Right.
Like, what?
And it's right. And so, I mean, it's, that the whole terminology is like, right. And that it should be like provider, the egg provider. It shouldn't be donation, you know, because it's, I mean, I think they're doing the same way that it's a blood donor or an organ donor, like they're giving part of themselves, right? But it's clearly not a free donation. You know what I mean? Like it's
right.
They are compensated for what they're, yeah, it's definitely strange terminology. And the, yeah, it's not, you know, but at the same time, like, if, I mean, and I know that there are countries where it is absolute, where, but see, that's the thing. There are countries where they only do actual donation, but they still, I believe, compensate for time and pay for meds and do whatever. So how much is the right amount to compensate someone for this process that is, you know,
right. Passing? No,
you know, so it's all there. It's interesting.
I've heard a lot of people say, like, the aspect about the donor itself, like placing the onus on them, like that's not a donation because you get paid, right. But on the other side of it, like what I was thinking about is, what you're sort of like the donee, like you're the recipient,
right,
of a donation, but you also paid, so that's almost unfair to you as well. Like that's not, like that's what I mean, like it's like,
right
like
right.
That's almost it's misleading, it's
right, and they use like that language to make it sound good again to get away from the commodification of what's actually going on, you know. And
because you're compensated for your time and not selling your eggs, exactly, because that's not
legal. And I'm paying for all the medical intervention that's happening, and
not the eggs,
yeah, not the eggs,
right. It's just like,
right,
but it's all and you pay for sperm, like, you know, it's not like you're paying them for their time,
right? No, that would be about 30 cents for most of them, right?
No, but it was really ridiculous, like, especially. Well, this is, you know, it applies to literally everything where it's like, well, college in 1970 cost whatever, and now it's $250,000. Mm-hmm. But like my parents, it's like, oh, well, you know, we bought like, I don't remember how many vials of sperm, but it was like, you know, $300 or something, and it cost more to ship it because it was frozen.
Right.
But now,
yeah,
my donor is still literally on the California Cryobank website to this day. He still has vials.
Wow.
So if anyone wants 23-year-old sperm, which apparently like that would still work, which is creepy beyond belief. Like
so strange. Well, but here's the thing that makes it a little less creepy is men's sperm. I'm like, they can like get people pregnant until they're 85, right?
Yeah,
so like
in
some ways it's like, yeah,
it's
but that's
fine, but it's still it's like actually weird. And it's not even like it's an 85-year-old man's sperm, it's like it's the 35-year-old man's sperm that's just
25
like,
years later, right.
It's so weird. But like now one of the vials of him, like literally of him, I called the cryobank. That was, I did an episode about that where I kind of talked to this guy and was like, wait, and he told me that and I had no idea and I was like, what, you know, on the phone. But one vial is $1,000. Was like, well, there goes my plan to like buy him out so nobody uses it, you know, because I'm not going to spend $6,000 just to prevent, which like no, I don't think anybody would pick a old donor who doesn't have any baby pictures or essay or, you know, whatever,
right? So strange. But it's still there hanging out
on the website because they still have it. They literally still, I do not understand how. Well, I guess they do get things mixed up because it's like, it just seems like at some point they're gonna.
Well, they do. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. How about this case where someone was just awarded, like, was it $40 million from where the doctor had used their own sperm?
There was a recent case that actually happened in Burlington, Vermont, which is like where I am, which is crazy. But she was awarded, I think, like $5.5 million for like the doctor fertility fraud situation,
right?
But the child, you know, didn't get any money in damages, which is interesting. It's the mom
right,
and the doctor, you know, who was already retired, just got his medical license revoked. That was the punishment. It does. That's like basically like it does not matter at that point.
It's all such a
like that's just crazy to me.
I wonder how many doctors are still out there doing that.
I don't know. I and it's like also like why? Why? Like what is the connection between? I mean, obviously it's access. So like,
well, I don't think it's just that. I think it's that whole like desire to like.
Yeah, like doctors are narcissists or something. Yes, like it's like
exactly. Some, yeah, not yeah. All of them clearly, but
no,
I think
obviously, there but like there's
some
like,
who are that whole like,
especially male OBGYNs. Yeah, misbehave that.
I'm like that. Yeah. So I feel like there's this need to like make many of myself, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hopefully, so... there's less of that these days.
Right, and it's like, how is that not considered like? Some form of like sexual assault or like because it, you know I don't
it's also strange
and it's sad to see more and more of these stories come out in the news.
Yep.
But at the same time I'm like I hope random people come out of the woodwork like I think that it is it's about to I think like blow up in the mainstream media.
I hope so.
I think that it will and I think that that will do something because money motivates people, but they're like
litigious
the public
society
opinion
motivates.
And yeah, you know, like
yeah.
The court of public opinion and social media, like mobs of people and petitions like that, I think will scare people.
Yeah.
To do something maybe. I don't know. I always get sent videos and articles by my friends.
I'm sure.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
I spend enough of my time thinking about this. Can't you send me pictures and articles about fluffy animals?
Right, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we talked and met.
Me too. This was fun. I'm glad you asked. This was fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad. And thank you for sharing your story and Riley and everybody. That's so, I'm so glad
she
that you're
sleeping. I give you a little peep. She's cute as a button. She's the sweetest little thing, but yeah, no, my pleasure to share. People ask all this, I'm constantly talking about it. And sometimes I feel like I need to shut up a little bit, like it's her story to tell, but I'm just so open. I feel like it's my job to normalize it, you know,
mm-hmm.
I normalize breastfeeding. I normalize, you know, cloth diapering and I'm normalizing, you know, the fact that this is a thing, you know, so I just.
Cloth diapering, that's totally unrelated, but like, I don't have a kid, but I feel like it's a good idea. I follow so many, like people that I follow are this whole donor conceived thing, and then the other half are like mommy vloggers who like sort of exploit their kids on the internet. But some of them have cool good advice.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot to learn from people out there.
Yeah,
don't recreate the wheel.
yeah. All right, well, I think that I will do this episode this week because I have all these old ones that I like did in the very beginning, but like what you were saying where you had to go back and edit your Facebook post, I listened to me from 4 months ago and I'm like, oh, I can't, like,
can't say that.
I don't want to put that out because I feel like I don't know what I'm talking about at that point. So but okay.
Awesome.
Well, it was good to meet you.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Thanks.
I think I actually hear her waking up, so this is perfect timing. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. That was this one. I think Cora's experience, though, is a really good illustration of some of the pros of using an open donor or finding a way to having an open relationship with a donor. So I'm really glad she came on to share. If you are donor conceived and want to come on the show, you should send me an email. And also, I have made the executive decision to move the episode release day from Thursdays to Fridays. So I will see you next Friday. Bye.